I don't know what he's going to say at that point, really.
And I'm not sure that we could define it.
Well, could you define it under? Could you insert depravity in there?
That's the New York approach.
And that under circumstances.
It says under circumstances evincing a depraved indifference to human life. He recklessly engaged in conduct which creates a grave risk of death to another person, and thereby causes serious physical injury to another person.
So they add grave risk in there too. You see, you.
Might be appropriate to.
Pretty bad.
You know, I think New York's worse. I think because you add the element of what's a grave risk of death as along with your depravity.
I'm kind of getting around to Bud's idea of 2 degrees.
Yeah. I didn't really espouse that because.
You didn't?
No. I think that there's an idea here, if we can state it that to our satisfaction, that makes some importance to. This thing. We go back to the first, causes physical injury if you do it either intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly. Or negligence if you use, I take it from some brackets I saw, that perhaps where you, I was gone, you people decided to take out or dangerous, which is something I would agree with. So then you got negligent physical injury where you're using a deadly weapon. Then you come to the second, and you get serious physical injury if you're not using a weapon.
Right.
And you get only any physical injury if you're using the deadly or dangerous weapon. And then you get recklessly into the thing if you cause serious physical injury to another by means.
And have a deadly weapon.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Right.
Yes.
And have the deadly weapon. And then the third, you get to this thing where deadly and dangerous weapons aren't involved. And you got all three kinds of conduct, intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly. Are involved, any one of the three rather, but you look then to the surrounding circumstances as to whether there was a considerable degree of risk of the loss of some human life. That's what you're really doing. I think it is a third step, and I think maybe the problem we're having is stating the thing to our satisfaction rather than the concept.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm not right. That's my own idea. Maybe we're just having a difficulty stating the third concept.
I hope depraved has some other definition somewhere other than what Webster's New World Dictionary gives it, because I don't think this fits. It says morally bad, corrupt, or pervert. And I realize it's a standard phrase. New York uses it, but.
What does extreme? How is extreme defined?
Extreme? Okay.
Synonym, great. To the outer limits.
First degree.
Okay, extreme is at the end or outermost point. Very good, bud. Very good. Farthest away. Most remote. Utmost. Last. Final. Going to great lengths. In the greatest degree. Very great. Oh, very great. Or greatest. Excessive. Immoderate.
Furthermore, ladies and gentlemen, you are instructed that extreme indifference
means the guy is
very
way out. How about total? If you're going to have a qualifying adjective, how about total?
I was thinking of total. Does that put
burden
on
that's
that?
Pretty high burden.
Total.
He's talking to himself.
Yeah, it didn't get all the way.
Well, we don't do anything really by playing with words. We know what we're talking about. The question is, from a practical standpoint, are we going to be able to get it do it so a judge can instruct on it? Because we could use gross or great or any of the words. The only thing we might accomplish by using gross that we don't accomplish by using extreme, for instance, is we know that we can borrow from the civil field and know that the courts have had to deal with gross negligence for a long time. They dealt with it for a long time before they got around to rewriting the guest passenger law in about 1959 here, or 61, to screw up some very good decisions.
Well, you know, we've had a lot of discussion for the past few months on terms like substantial. You know, should we try to define substantial? Should we just put it in there and leave it and let the judge worry about it? Gross deviations, another term that we've used, and we finally decided that we shouldn't try to define the term. Particularly when it's used to try to define some other term that we want to define. You know, you get to the point where you define it to death after a while, and I don't know whether we're creating more problems than we're solving with some of this terminology, but I know the Model Penal Code finally got to the point on their definitions that, and there's been quite a bit of discussion in their commentary about this, that they don't... Some of these words, substantial, for example, they don't try to define that.
Is the difference then really then a little bit from what Berkeley said, that this is the intent to hurt, and it differs from the intent to kill? Because as you were pointing out, John has problems because he saw in this thing the intent to kill, as you pointed out, it would probably come as attempted murder now, as rather assault with intent to kill. Is that the distinction? If I intend to cause you grievous, apart from reckless, let's put reckless aside, but the intentionally or knowingly, if I intend to cause you serious harm, but don't intend to kill you, then it would be assault in the first degree, assuming I was intentionally, knowingly causing serious physical. That could be second, too, unless it was a show me extreme indifference to human value.
Don, tell us why you don't like the simple and aggravated approach to the Model Penal Code. See, they have just the simple and the aggravated. 2 degrees only of assault.
Yes, I certainly do. Thank you.
Well, I can't say that I don't like it. It was mainly a question of structuring the draft. I think as far as what they accomplish and what they were trying to accomplish in their draft, we felt that we were doing the same thing, only in just a little different format. But
well, we've got 3 degrees. They've only got 2.
Yeah.
And that has the very important virtue of simplicity.
But you see, with respect now to John's objection about plea bargaining,
but he answers his own question, doesn't he? When your answer, we're taking away from him the DWIK. And that's what he was using for reference of bargaining. They charge him with intent to kill, and then they cop out on intent to do bodily harm.
Of course, what you got to remember too about the Model Penal Code, their structure isn't as simple as it looks because the way they put their penalty provisions in. Actually, aggravated assault really is two separate crimes. I mean, if you'll read, if it's aggravated assault under paragraph A, it's a second degree felony. But if it's under B, then it's a third-degree felony, you see. So
they, in effect, have three...
In effect, they're just saying in a little different way. But we have gone through so far in structuring it in terms of degrees like New York does, and thinking that our penalty structure then would be geared to a degree approach.
Yeah.
Well, they saw this. Then, if we borrow this, leaving simple assault as our assault in the third degree, then trying to compare across, our assault in the second degree would be attempts to cause serious bodily injury to another, or causing such injury purposely, knowingly, or recklessly under circumstances manifesting. So, really, that would that's about what John was arguing, that if we follow the Model Penal Code, paragraph A is a second degree.
I
offense.
And then the only one on the third degree, or first degree, they got their difference, would be the attempt to cause or purposely or knowingly causing bodily injury to another with a deadly weapon. I make my point, but you'll notice that reckless does not fall into the third category.
Yeah. Well, Bob, I would.
The only thing it becomes the
one fellow who asked me to make sure
top priority is the deadly weapon.
And the vehicle.
Yeah, vehicle.
Yeah, right. Right.
Call. I was planning.
Yeah,
to
I agree.
So this weekend, talk to him about something.
Not that that makes any difference. Well, we're going to be stuck on this thing. What are you doing, you? Get stuck on a thing like this, Coach. You just
well, we take a brief recess, clear our brain a little bit. I was trying to get some language down here on the paper, but
not too sure.
Well, I don't. Do we, Bob? Do you agree generally with Bud? Do you see the difference that he was outlining? I have a little difficulty in grasping the. I realize it reads different from Section 2, but do you see a?
Well, yes, I think so. I think there's a sufficient demarcation, and maybe the word extreme has to stay in.
Would you agree that recklessly should come out, or should not?
I mean, on
John's
Burns's,
argument, yeah.
Not unless you go to 2 degrees.
Because he's the one who sent me some dope on him, also at California, the state bar.
What's your feeling, Don? Do you grasp the two differences, the differences between 3?
Well, yeah, I think I do, and at least I thought I did before I came in the meeting.
So did I.
And so you call their clerk.
Use Ted's office.
Yeah. You know, one other way that we could structure this thing, which might make a little more sense, would be to take the serious physical injury by means of a deadly or dangerous weapon out of second degree and move it down into the first degree category. Because you've got the intentional and knowingly plus the serious, and
well, you just strike C from 2 if you're going to do that, because you already got it, don't you? Now you're back to the.
I don't think
extreme
so.
Difference.
I think that you've got a different idea in 3 than you have in 2. I really do.
Yeah, but I think we may have said more than we intended to say there, right?
If we go beyond the model, I mean the other codes, maybe we should, but if we did do as Don suggests and pull the item B out of Section 2 out, then we would not have a conflict. Then the phrase, intentionally or knowingly causing physical injury to another by means of a deadly or dangerous weapon, would stand on its own. And then you could say, or recklessly causes serious physical injury to another under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference to the value of human life. And then you have the two concepts separated. One would be the intentional physical injury to another, serious or otherwise, by a deadly or dangerous weapon. Second element of that, or second ground in there, would be the recklessness that indifference.
Yeah. Then you'd have, that would cover, as under second degree, you'd have an intentional, serious physical injury to a person, whether it's a weapon or not, then you'd have reckless serious injury.
By a deadly or dangerous.
Weapon. And then you'd have intentional physical injury by means of a weapon under third degree would be covered, and then recklessly under these extreme circumstances. How does that grant?
I like that.
No, I don't. You're getting down the thing in number three. If there's going to be any difference at all,
comes from these matches.
Is the idea of the circumstances?
It's taken
both the intentional and the reckless acts, and putting them in terms of the circumstances under which they occur, which is what distinguishes three from two.
But that's further than other states. I'm not disagreeing necessarily with you, but that's beyond what other states, and I think it adds it seems to me one who intentionally, and this relates to Bob's, that normally this extreme indifference relates to recklessness, that if you intend to do it, it would seem to me that if you shot into a crowd, you intentionally shot into a crowd, perhaps to hurt somebody, or knowingly shot into a crowd, that you would, to stop them or whatever, you would certainly qualify without the extreme indifference. I think if you intend to do it, you almost assume the indifference, don't you?
Well, then maybe the thing is to come back is to say that anything that you could show under three, you could actually make to fit two if you didn't have three there, which is Bob's idea, and just eliminate three, third degree.
In the interest of simplicity and streamlining, let's talk a minute about having simple assault and aggravated assault and let the penalty reflect the difference in degrees rather than all these complex distinctions that are difficult even for lawyers to figure out, let alone juries.
In other words, if you just knocked out three and simply made your penalty range big enough in two to take care of some of the situations where there's the sentencing authority, the judge, would take into consideration the circumstances in which it was committed.
Of course, isn't that one of the things that we're trying to get away from, is the 1 to 25, and some guy from Crook County gets 1, and some guy does the same thing in Marion and gets 25?
I don't know that you're going to get help. You're going to get away with from that anyhow.
Being on the committee 2 weeks, I figure I
can
make...
You can reach that by using the federal approach and have the 100% indeterminate sentence where the California Corrections Authority fixes the sentence after they get in there.
Let me give you an example of the kind of thing that I'm thinking about. I was appointed to defend a while back. A young fellow was all hopped up on dope and stopped by a Clark County deputy sheriff. He took the deputy sheriff prisoner and made him drive him across
into
Portland, where he was finally stopped, after holding a gun to the head of the deputy all the time and finally pulled the trigger. There was a misfire, the guy'd be dead. Well, Judge Baloney first sentenced this guy to life, and his theory being that not only was there the kidnapping, and even though it wasn't a planned kidnapping for ransom, that yet the aggravating factor here of having the danger, the deadly weapon, and attempting to use it was the thing that he indicated was what made him say, I'm going to give this 23-year-old man life. By the way, we ran into a bugaboo of mine here in this language, and it's too late for me to change this use in the English language, but I don't like under circumstances.
I don't know, in the circumstances.
In circumstances.
Not
but,
with you.
But they use it everywhere now, and it's too... Circum means around, and I don't know how the hell people ever got to talking about under circumstances. But it's in the model. It's in everything.
Yeah.
People use it daily in
And if the language is to communicate, and we all know what you mean when you say it, I guess we can't quite be fussy about whether it's in or under. It's just one of my pet peeves.
Well, maybe you and I can solve that problem now. Let's see if we can.
Make it a crime to use under.
Yeah, right.
That'll be a fourth degree assault.
Well, we're going to have to resolve this matter. I wish John were here, because I'm sure he's going to find some. He's not a member of the committee, but he asked to sit in, and I was most pleased to have him.
Who behind
Carl's
besides Haas?
That's all, I think.
Yeah, there's four of you.
We had Mr. Thornton, or Mr.
Then
we had a place set.
Arthur, Platt, Tanzer, Sloan, and Kathleen also.
Yeah, we invite, at all the subcommittee meetings, we send a notice to the Legislative Council's office so Kathleen can come, she can help us on some technical questions.
Sure, Mr. Project Director.
Well, I'd like to say this with respect to the format here. Of course, what we intended to do and what we've been trying to do all along is to leave out the penalty provisions of these things and then grade them all and attempt to grade them all so they all fit in together and we don't have inconsistencies in our penalty structure. And that's why we've gone to this degree approach. And although certainly the commission as a body can change this when we've completed the drafting and grade these however the commission wants. But to facilitate this, I would hate to see us get into just a simple assault or aggravated assault like the Model Penal Code does, because it's going to stick out like a sore thumb in connection with all of our other drafts. I mean, everything else we've done is drafted in terms of degrees. Now, if we're going to change this,
well,
I think we should change them
all.
You
could still call it degree. You could still call it degree.
First degree and second degree.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, you see, they've really got 3 degrees here. Well, actually, they've got 4, if you want to be technical about it. They've got a simple assault could be a misdemeanor or a petty misdemeanor. Aggravated assault could be either a felony in the second degree or a felony in the third degree. Now, we felt that assault in the third degree would probably be graded as a misdemeanor, like assault and battery is now. And then assault in the second degree would be a middle category of felony, and then assault in the first degree would probably fit in the upper range of felonies. Whatever grading structure we went to. Same way when we drafted robbery, we felt that first degree robbery would come in the upper category of the grading structure.
May I ask a question, Don? When you get to your full committee meetings, no matter what the subcommittee has done, it's the full commission that makes the final decisions, is it not?
Oh yeah, sure.
Sure.
And although the full commission relies strongly upon what the subcommittee has done, obviously, you know, because
right.
Yeah. But at the same time, certainly a lot of the things that the subcommittee does, the full commission doesn't reconsider, for example, the grammatical structure isn't discussed too much. But certainly the policy considerations are with arson, for example, Bob knows. We fought through arson for a full day, well, almost 2 days, I guess, didn't we? And finally ended up sending it back to the. We sent arson back to the subcommittee finally from the commission.
I do remember some comments from Senator Burns about that.
But it is certainly a commission decision and final analysis. And,
no more, thank
sure.
you.
Thank you.
Well. Mr. Chairman, for the purpose of getting somewhere, I would move that at least we adopt the concept of having the 3 degrees of assault, first of all.
Okay.
Just
all right.
So we can get on to decision making.
Heard the motion and the discussion. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Carried.
And I think if we do that, isn't really true that the one thing that's really bothering us now then is the use of the word extreme? That's the chief thing that's bothering us.
Well, that's what's bothering us, but the insertion of recklessly in three bothers John. But he isn't here to defend himself, so. But it doesn't.
I think that we can send this in and see what happens to it. In section one, I'll move adoption of section one, deleting the words "or dangerous," and then, of course, changing the numbering to conform with the drafting manual.
Heard Mr. Thornton's motion. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Carried.
All right, it's your turn now, bud.
I'll move the adoption of section two as drafted, with the change of the obvious error,
yeah,
physical to bodily to physical.
And the outline change.
Yes, the outline change also.
All right, we've heard Mr. Lentz, Senator Lentz's motion. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Carried. Three.
Well, I'd move that we adopt it as it's drafted at this time, with the elimination of the subsection one symbol there.
Heard the motion. Any discussion?
Yes, let's discuss for just a minute here. Okay. This then allows extreme to go in. What do you think of your notion of substituting gross for extreme, Bud?
Well, I think perhaps there's some logic to doing that, Bob, if we're going to leave an adjective in at all, because at least our courts have some experience with working with the word gross. You can go back to some of the simple things that they said before the statute was changed, and before Williamson, in which, in some case, they just said gross simply means great. Something more than simple. Something more than...
Well, if you'll amend your motion to
I'll accept.
Substitute gross for extreme, I'll go along and swallow my objections to the adjective.
I will certainly consent to that.
All right. Senator Lentz's motion is to adopt Section 3 as written, removing the parentheses 1 and substituting the word gross for the word extreme on the last line thereof. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. Carried.
Well, you're really running this committee, boy.
Bang, bang, bang.
Just so I understand, for the purposes of any further staff work on this, that you just leave it the way it is. I mean, you feel that it's satisfactory with you.
I think we first had the policy concept of three. One, that we were going to go this way, that assault meant some injury. The second policy, that we're going to go to 3 degrees, and then the third, we've now taken what we're at least ready to submit to the full commission for language.
But you're satisfied with section three, that it says what you want it to say, or what you think it says.
I think the concept there is that it's the additional factor of the circumstances.
We do agree, do we not, that the phrase under or in the circumstances manifesting gross indifference to the value of human life applies equally to intentionally, knowingly, and recklessly.
In my mind, it does.
I think there's no other way to read that.
Okay. Otherwise,
yes, I think so.
Otherwise, you don't need it. You can get, because you can go back to two.
Back into two. Yeah.
Okay, and that will take us then.
All right, let's move on to page 14, is it?
Yes.
Menacing.
This is your threat.
We've got some
examples set out here.
Why a new word, menacing, instead of threatening?
Language again from New York, I believe, where menacing comes from.
Apparently New York does make a distinction between menacing and intended to cover not only menacing physical acts, but also threatening words. I certainly prefer threat to menace.
Well, it's just to talk it over a little bit.
But the title for the section comes from New York, the menacing.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Model Penal Code has physical menace in it.
Yeah, they combine it in with their assault. Whereas we've put it in as a separate section.
Yes, this is almost word for word the New York.
Yes. Section 120.15 is the New York.
Well, there is this good argument, and that is that we are tying ourselves to a major populous state where we'll have the advantages of judicial construction in that state. So,
and we've set out some hypotheticals on beginning at the bottom of page 14 and 15, and top of 15.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Glenn?
I would think that President, at least it's our thinking, I haven't bothered to look this up in the dictionary yet, but I suppose all of us are sort of thinking that we're talking about synonyms here, menacing, threatening. And it might be that we're better off to use menacing so as in this case not to carry along trappings of threatening,
mm-hmm.
which may be tied into our old distinction between
yeah.
assault and battery.
Mm-hmm. Possibly.
Might be some reason for using a different word.
Because menacing is more than threatening. It includes threatening, it's lesser.
Menace. Projecting, threatening. A threat or threatening. Anything threatening harm or evil. Verb translate and verb intransate. To threaten. Synonym. See threaten.
Yeah. Of course, another problem you get into with just the trying to decide what kind of language to use is that, I mean, threat appears elsewhere in code. We use threat under theft by extortion language threat and.
Yeah, but isn't that the same kind of threat here?
Well, you can threaten to do something other than putting somebody in fear of physical injury. What we're trying to do is have the word convey the thought of a threat, but a threat to do what? A threat to do physical injury, right?
To the victim. I mean, to the recipient. In other words, what if I tell you that I'm going to hit Bud, or say your child, or I'm going to rough up your child? I'm not then guilty of menacing?
No.
And that's the difference, because I certainly threatened you, but I certainly didn't menace you.
Here you've got in fear of imminent serious disability.
Well, imminent, and it says attempts to place another person in fear, and I presume.
They're talking about the person to whom it relates.
The menacing word is made. It doesn't say that, but I presume that's what the court cases would hold. And if that's true, then there is a difference between a threat and a menace.
I would think, to me, that although the dictionary says that it gives them a synonyms under each word, to me there's a little more sinister connotation to menace than there is to threat. We use threaten sometimes in rather innocuous ways, actually, as those plows certainly threaten rain. We use the idea of we're more apt, I think, if we're going to talk about a danger, when we're going to use a noun, we're more apt to use the word menace than threat. At least, it seems to me that you are. I think you convey somewhat more of a serious thing. Maybe it's just the way that the words strike me.
Well, do we want to leave it the way it is?
I'm satisfied.
So am I.
Okay, take it to the form of a motion then. Thornton, propose we accept section 4 as written. All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. Carried.
Now, section 5 on page 17, recklessly endangering.
I'm sorry. We didn't get away from that one that easy. I got to have a question
answered. No, first. Back up to 14.
We're not having it because we're talking about, now in this one, we're talking about an attempt in menacing.
Yeah, he attempts.
We're not talking about actually doing something. It's enough if he attempts to do it. For instance, you don't put the intended victim is unaware of the actor's threat because, for example, he's blind and doesn't know the actor is pointing a gun at him. So here now, are we getting into any problem about what we talked about earlier today, about the difference between crimes and attempts, when we actually define this crime as an attempt?
In other words, whether this could be attempted assault?
Well, how could you now get in one of attempted menacing? Because menacing itself is an attempt.
Attempt to attempt. Can't have attempted menacing.
I wouldn't think so.
Okay. I wouldn't think so either.
But we're not getting into any serious problem with your earlier expressed thought about the difference between a crime and then making a separate. All right. As long as you're satisfied.
I think
one of the reasons the problem was caused because menacing, I have read this again just today, but I think one of the problems was that this does pick up the empty gun.
Yep.
Which was a kind of an anomaly where you point an empty gun, you don't really assault in that sense because you didn't have the capability of.
And what we're talking about here is not really, and when you look at the intent that the actor has, it's not an intent to necessarily hurt somebody or injure somebody, but it's an intent to
place them in fear.
Place them in fear.
Okay.
Now in 5, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Are we talking here now? It says if he recklessly engages in conduct, then to me there's a difference. Maybe it's only in my head, but if he engages in reckless conduct,
yeah,
which creates a substantial risk.
Would you agree, Don?
Well, this takes us back to our definitions of the culpability elements. Our definitions are framed in terms of defining recklessly and negligently and knowingly and intentionally.
I'm sure I've gone by the model penal code, the New York revised penal code, and everybody else, but I agree with you that.
You see, we're modifying the act of the
verb and not the
right. Not the noun.
And you see, you use the Wisconsin law. Whoever endangers another's safety by reckless conduct may be fined. But then you go to New York and they say recklessly engages in conduct.
Right, because their definitions are geared to recklessly. Negligently and intentionally.
Well, what about down here in your language? Reckless conduct, which is likely to cause physical injury but does not do so, does not constitute attempted assault, for one cannot attempt to act recklessly. Recklessly engages. Engages in reckless conduct. Maybe I'm just playing with words.
Here, now this is another one, just taken from New York. Menacing, recklessly endangering,
right out to New York.
That's fairly close to New York.
Yeah.
They have 2 degrees of it in New York, too.
Well, New York is very big on degrees. I mean, they're, as I recall, under criminal mischief, they have four degrees of criminal mischief.
You've got bodily injury back in here again, too.
Yeah, the gremlins.
Where's the difference here?
Rob, do you have any thoughts on it?
I think it's all right.
Well, I think that probably until we would see a decision that would somehow try to spell out that we meant something different here than engages in reckless conduct. Supposing we were to say, I don't want to say it this way because this upsets your scheme and your method of drafting here, Don. But aren't we really saying this with a subtle difference? A person commits the crime of recklessly endangering another person if his reckless conduct creates a substantial risk of serious physical injury to another person.
Yeah.
I can understand why you want to state it the way you do, because you can stick, at least insofar as what I've been looking at, you've been sticking to this kind of a statement of the crime. I don't think it's that important. I don't think there's enough difference, and until we might see some decision that says, yes, there certainly is a difference between talking about recklessly engaging in conduct and engaging in reckless conduct. Unless we get to a position, then we would have to, I suppose, take a look at what we get some court saying there is a difference. To me, there's a subtle difference, but I don't think maybe it's an important one. What do you think, John? We're on page 17.
I'm looking at it.
I raised the point about whether recklessly engages in conduct is what we mean, or engages in reckless conduct, and whether there really and truly is a difference.
Reckless or engages in... I don't know whether really and truly there is a difference.
The only thing you can say for the other is that we... Maybe you can. Maybe this is just good, and maybe Bob's point he made a minute ago in connection with another vote is a good one, that if we stick to the New York statute and where we can, that state being so populous, there are going to be decisions which will serve as guides for our courts probably more quickly than they would evolve otherwise from our own decisions.
Well, I think that's true, and this is New York, isn't it?
Yeah, this is New York.
I was going to say, what about the 2-degree situation in New York? Should we give consideration to it? On page 21.
And where we get into again to with our old friend depraved and grave risk of death.
Well, we can conform that to our own masterful language there.
Well, we can get to extreme indifference. Good.
is there some merit in John, what do you think? Is there some merit in making 2 degrees here?
Well, certainly from the standpoint of plea bargaining, it's
extremely gross.
I think that
would facilitate things for the prosecutors.
That's obviously how New York is set up.
That's right. New York, and of course, I'm convinced that New York and Michigan, too. In fact, Michigan flat out says this is one of their basic objectives, is to facilitate plea bargaining. Of course, they've been criticized for that in certain areas, but... I think that you could go another degree. My feeling was that where you've got a situation where there hasn't really been any injury, that if you provide for it, that even though you could argue, well, there's a risk of death here. I mean, we're talking about serious bodily injury. Where there hasn't even been an injury inflicted, you might really get pretty tough questions as to whether it's 1 degree or another. and we felt that this was not going to be probably a big area, but you never know.
Well,
as long as we provided for it, there wasn't any reason to refine it down that far. But
Mr. Chairman, if we talk about making this 2 degrees, we're indirectly approaching another question that another subcommittee is going to wrestle with, and that I think we're going to fight in the full commission. There will be some skirmish in the full commission on, and that is classification of crimes. And I think there has been a thinking about distinguishing misdemeanors between class A, B, and C misdemeanors, and endangerment here is really we're talking about a misdemeanor type offense. Isn't this right, or are you talking about something possibly higher?
Well, no, I think this would be a misdemeanor offense, John. Of course, you see, New York, of course, is a very complicated and sophisticated penalty structure, and I think unnecessarily so. But you see, they'll talk about a Class A misdemeanor and a Class B misdemeanor, and goes on and on. But
well, that's something to which I'm not wedded to, and when I was talking about the possible conflict in the commission, yeah, it's going to be between the philosophy of some perhaps to adopt that structuring of offenses and my own feeling that maybe we should not. And so if we talk about putting this into 2 degrees, what we're really talking about is 2 degrees of misdemeanor, I think, but maybe I'm wrong. And I believe sincerely that we should avoid it wherever we possibly can.
Yeah, well, of course, now in classes of crimes, now the subcommittee has approved
gross and petty misdemeanors, right?
Petty or misdemeanor and petty misdemeanor approach. That's the only difference that they've made in classifying our crimes from our present law. They've shredded out the misdemeanor category into a petty misdemeanor offense as well as a.
Well. I'm sorry that I had to be gone, and I'm getting in on the tail end of it. Is there a consensus or a feeling that we should make it 2 degrees?
No, I just threw it out in passing.
But all you're really getting at, and what New York did, is that their lesser crime was one where you're only threatening serious physical injury, and in the greater crime, you're threatening, again, to extinguish a life, and under, again, bring the circumstances idea to it, which is what distinguishes our third degree from second degree assault, is the circumstances.
Yeah, and of course, you got to keep in mind our definition of serious physical injury, too, is that creates a substantial risk of death. I mean, that's implicit in our definition of serious physical injury, so it'd be somewhat redundant, possibly, to have another degree in here that specified risk of death when we've already talked about serious physical injury.
Just made me question my decision about third degree assault. I mean, first degree assault.
That's close. We're not going back to that.
Well, I move we accept section 5 as drafted with the change of bodily to physical.
All right. Senator makes the motion. Any further discussion? John?
Something that's reoccurred repeatedly, you may have discussed, you may not have discussed, is the definition of substantial risk. Don, are we going to define that in the general definition section? We didn't discuss it last week. The other seven. Is it necessary?
We discussed a little while ago.
What's the thought?
Probably some words you're just going to leave the courts to work out.
We've discussed substantial in other subcommittees,
right,
with other things, but I think the general feeling has been that you get to the point where you just can't define any further.
Yeah. Okay, well, that was the only question I had. I'll move the question because it looks okay to me.
I think, again, our courts are getting are used to dealing with terms such as substantial evidence and so on, as opposed to a scintilla.
This is also a New York language, substantial risk.
Did we vote on that?
No. All those in favor of the motion, keep by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Carried. Page 22, coercion.
I would say this, as far as subcommittee is concerned with this section, I'm not overly enthusiastic about having this in here. The reporter on this section, I'm sorry she isn't here to defend her work, I told her that I felt this should be a subcommittee decision on this, that whether or not we would include this within our assault draft.
Extortion?
We have it pretty well covered, I think, in instances where it's most likely to occur, and that's in where there's some property element involved, attempt to get property as a result of this. This language is almost identical to our language that we have in our theft draft, theft by extortion.
I think this calls for some study, because extortion is something else than coercion. And extortion will not reach certain types of racketeering and shakedown conduct. I don't know whether your theft statute will or not. I haven't checked it out. But I wouldn't dismiss this out of hand, that there isn't need for an offense of coercion.
You see, now, on page 25, under present law, any person who threatens any injury to the person or property of another, or who threatens to accuse another of any crime with intent thereby to extort any pecuniary advantage or property from him, or with intent to compel him to do any act against his will, shall be punished. That's 163.480. The crime is committed when the threat is made, and there is no requirement that property be obtained. The proposed draft follows the present law, but separates the offenses of theft by extortion and coercion. If there's property involved, it would fall under theft, and if there was no property obtained as a result of the threat, it could be attempt. But I think you may have a good point, Bob. That maybe
notes on this that I probably can't find, but I can remember coming up against this, finding the extortion statute insufficient, and offering a bill on this.
Well, one thing jumping down, not to get too deeply into it, we're not going to get into it, but the thing that concerns me is apparently the thing that we have, at least in Illinois and a few of the other places, and it perhaps shows my thin skin, but says that coercion is demanding conduct or telling them to refrain from conduct to use or abuse his position as a public, not to abuse, but as a public servant, performing some act within its related official duties. And I wonder what committee chairman, please refrain from using obscene language or vulgar language, or I'll hold you out of, find you out of order and not let you testify. Maybe I'm straining it, but.
I get itchy about subsection 6.
I haven't studied it. Yes, you have to be a little careful there.
Oh, why would you get itchy about that?
I think that's kind of neat myself.
Now, it says they're not aiming at legitimate stuff. They're just after the racketeers.
That's right.
Now, we had a lot of discussion about this in connection with the theft draft. But
what's the pleasure of the group? Who drafted this part, Gunn?
Well, this was drafted by Jean Laverato, who's a staff member. She's not with us now. She left as of the 1st of February to get married. That's why she isn't here today.
Where did it come from?
This, of course, the Model Penal Code has coercion in its draft. This comes from the Model Penal Code, as well as the New York 135-60.
Yeah. There's sort of a throwing together of several here.
It just seems to me, though, they took it's such a hybrid that it loses the safeguards of one and in both instances. For instance, the Model Penal Code says that the
the criminal coercion is if it's with a purpose unlawfully to restrict another's, and then defines this withholding action of a public official.
In Illinois, too, you see, it starts out the first part of it by saying these things on a threat to perform without lawful authority any of the following acts.
But we don't have that in our draft.
Yeah, this language is much closer to the New York language.
Well, Don, Mr. Chairman, Don, you said you didn't, you were a little uneasy with respect to this. How would you alternatively cover the area, the void that would be left if we didn't have?
You mean the void that would be left with respect to our present extortion statutes?
Well, yeah, I think our present extortion statute, first glance, almost covers some of the same things that this covers.
Well,
but if you don't have the element of property in it.
I think our present extortion statute is covered under our theft statute the way it's drafted, because under our present law, there has to be an intent to extort a pecuniary advantage or property from it. But there doesn't have to be any actual obtaining of property as a result of this to commit extortion. So under our theft draft, if you obtain property, it's theft by extortion. If you don't obtain property, but you just make the threat with the intent, the same intent that's necessary under ORS 163480, it would be attempted theft by extortion, you see. But I'm not, so with respect to our present law, I don't think there is a void, but with respect to the question Bob raised, he feels that our present extortion statutes has proven to be inadequate, that maybe there is a void that should be filled, that not because we're not picking it up from what we've got, but maybe what we have now under ORS 163480 isn't adequate. That may be the problem.
What's the pleasure of the group?
I'm not ready to vote on this thing yet, and I've got a time problem that I can't stay much longer. I'd like to look at some notes that I have in this area and read this thing and study it before I vote.
I would say this with respect to the assault article. I think this coercion crime could go on any number of other places in our overall structure.
It could almost
besides assault.
It could almost be a footnote to the extortion section.
Yeah.
But I was going to make the suggestion that if the rest of you haven't looked at extortion, you ought to look at coercion in conjunction with extortion. And frankly, we worked about three different meetings on extortion, and I can't remember. I haven't refreshed my memory since then. So I maybe be in order to move that we postpone consideration of this and at the next meeting bring up the extortion, the approved extortion draft side by side with this, and then discuss which way to go.
Yeah, actually, New York lumps it in with kidnapping. You know, they put in their kidnapping.
Coercion?
Is that agreeable?
Yeah, it's agreeable to me. I can see us just sitting here looking at some of this stuff. I might very well want to persuade somebody that he should abstain from something he has a legal right to do, or I'm going to let his wife know where he spent last Tuesday night, which may hold him up to hatred by her. Because I may have no other means of making him refrain from doing something which I don't like very well. You know, I'm just using I and so on, but I'm...
Yeah, but it might come under the defense though, under Section 7.
Oh.
So we got a defense in there, too.
It is a defense that the defendant reasonably believed the threatened charge to be true.
No, if that's if would be charged with a crime, and that isn't what I'm necessarily saying.
No, I see.
I see.
Well, I just read a book about senatorial politics, and that's the kind of thing they do in Washington, D.C., not in Salem, Oregon.
Now that we've been vindicated, is there a general agreement with John's suggestion
yes.
that we postpone the discussion of Section 6 coercion until we meet again? Hopefully we'll all have read, which I have not read, the approved draft on extortion, and maybe have comments on this.
And we're meeting 9:30 Saturday morning?
We're meeting 9:30 Saturday morning
yes.
where?
Commission, in 3:15.
3:15, okay. When's our next subcommittee meeting?
Well, it hasn't been set.
All right.
What I'd like to be able to do during the session is be able to have a subcommittee meeting every 2 or 3 weeks. If we can, I realize it's going to be difficult. And we'll just, I suppose, have to play it by ear to a certain extent.
I do have committee meetings on Tuesday and Thursday afternoons. State Federal's regular time is Tuesday and Thursday afternoon.
I have Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 1 to 5, and Tuesdays and Thursdays from 3 to 5.
I have Friday mornings available.
I could come early until session time.
Yeah, but we met at early meetings on Friday morning at 8 o'clock or something that kind. At this point, we still have from 8 o'clock till session time.
My subcommittee.
How's
that hit you,
Bob?
You're fine with me.
My subcommittee's been trying to meet every 3 weeks during the session. There's another consideration that the more we can meet during the session, the less money we spend in per diem as far as mileage for the out of town people.
True.
And this is terribly important. I've just been accommodating myself. We started I think at 3 and went till about 8:30 or 9 the last time. But I had, you know, 1 to 5
everything except Wednesdays or Fridays.
Same here.
Well, let's try that may be the thing because we may, at least for some of the one of the subcommittees, we may have to go to evening meetings because we've got three subcommittees and each one of them.